The Hoopheads Podcast is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
You might think that I'm absolutely making this up, but it was fourth grade and it was like immediate. It was so obvious to me. I was, you know, I'd come home from practices, whatever. And this is like very low recreation basketball at the time. And I come home from practice and I had a mirror in my room and I would just draw with markers that you could erase afterwards. And I would go home and just draw stuff, try to think of drills, try to draw plays. And I was never like going to the coach like, hey, this is my awesome play. But but that was just how my mind was working. Like at just such a young age, I like saw the game so well.
Alicia Kamaki just completed her seventh season as head coach of the Sierra Canyon High School girls basketball team. During her first three seasons at the helm, she won back-to-back-to-back California state championships. This season, she led the Trailblazers to the number one ranking in California and the prestigious California Open Division state championship, giving her four state titles in just seven seasons at Sierra Canyon. At Sierra Canyon, Kamaki has an overall record of 182-43 and has won an average of 26 games a season in 7 years. In 2017, Alicia was selected as one of four national coaches to be a court coach for the USA Basketball U16 national team trials in Colorado Springs. In 2019, Kamaki was honored as the LA Times Coach of the Year, Cal High Sports Coach of the Year, Daily News Coach of the Year, and was a finalist for the USA Today and the Wilson WBCA National Coach of the Year. Kamaki was also chosen to coach the 2019 Jordan Brand National All-American Game in Las Vegas. Coach Kamaki has six state championship rings and one national championship on her resume. If you enjoy this episode, please leave us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes or wherever you listen to the show. Make sure you're subscribed to the Hoopheads Pod so you don't miss an episode, and tell a friend or colleague in the basketball community to give us a listen. Have your notebook ready to go as you listen to this episode with Alicia Kamaki, girls varsity head coach at Sierra Canyon High School in the state of California.
Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads Podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are pleased to welcome to the podcast from Sierra Canyon High School in the state of California, Alicia Kamaki. Alicia, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're excited to have you on and get a chance to learn about all the great things that you've done in the game of basketball so far and kind of hear what you have look forward to there at Sierra Canyon, building your program into a powerhouse there in the state of California. So I want to start out by asking you how you got into the game of basketball as a young kid.
Yeah, I played pretty much every sport when I was younger. And so I started softball when I was in like four years old, and I was playing up with some sixth graders and I was a little bit bored. And so I saw a sign for like a youth league out on a signpost. And I said, "Hey dad, can I play basketball?" And he's like, "Yeah, sure." And I was somehow pretty good as a third grader, little Asian girl that was probably like 3 feet tall at the time. So I like had some really natural instincts for the game. And so I started as a third grader and just kind of played all the way through.
Gotcha. So did you spend a lot of time when you were a kid playing like on your driveway, just finding people in your neighborhood to play? Or did you find most of your playing was done in an organized league or a team setting like that?
Oh, it's crazy that how much times have changed. But yes, begged my parents to buy me a hoop. I actually got one when I was 13 years old for my birthday. The neighbor had a hoop, so I was always shooting when I was younger, but finally got one for my 13-year-old birthday, and I actually put it together myself.
Nice. Good
wow,
work.
Nice
good
work.
Yes. Good work. That's awesome.
Yeah. That's awesome. Some work at my house for me?
Yeah. Since then, I've done nothing productive with my hands, but somehow I put together my basketball hoop. And so, yeah, I mean, I would be out there all the time, AM, PM, didn't really matter. You know, my dad would shoot with me, try to get some neighbors on the street to come play with me. But yeah, just grew up playing outdoors on the blacktop. You know, I grew up at a private school, but we didn't have a gym. So all league games and all that stuff were outside, and we play at recess all the time with the boys and was always outside playing.
So did you find yourself, as you grew up, did you find yourself playing more with boys when you were playing sort of the pickup basketball scene, the driveway, the neighborhood scene, or how did that go about for you?
Yeah, I mean, there was a good mix. It, for the most part, it was just because my neighbors were boys. At school, we had a really small class, so there was probably like 20 kids in our class, and there was like three of us girls who would just play whatever with the boys. So it wasn't necessarily because it was like a gender dominant thing. It was just the fact of there was more boys that were interested in playing outside.
Gotcha. Outside. That's who was there.
Yeah, exactly. But of course, you know, the leagues and stuff that I grew up playing were females. So, you know, there was girls that were just as excited to play as I was.
What was it about basketball that made you fall in love with it so early? What was it about the game that really grabbed a hold of you?
Oh man, I wish I really knew the answer to that. I mean, it was just something that came so naturally for me, like to be able to dribble and like shoot a three-pointer when you're this tiny little kid, was just something you fall in love with when you're a competitive athlete and you just want to succeed at something. And so you see a ball go through the net, or you can, you know, make a really good read and make a pass. I just had like really good court vision. And so it was just kind of fun to like see that play out, being able to just guard different people and, kind of like use my athleticism in a way that I hadn't experienced before with playing soccer or playing softball or something. But I think probably for me, the biggest thing was probably the speed of the game. You know, when you're four-year-olds playing softball, there's not much action going on out there. So I think just the speed of the game, no matter how bad we probably were when we were 6, 7, and 8 years old, the speed was going to always be constant. We're going to keep going up and down the court. And I was a pretty active kid, so that was enjoyable for me.
So you played other sports as well when you were a kid?
Correct.
So soccer, softball, what else? Anything else? Or were those your two?
Soccer, softball, and volleyball. And then so growing up with my private school, K through 8th, I played for the school team. I played all those sports for the school team. But I never played anything competitively when I was in like middle school and then high school, except for basketball.
Gotcha. So if you think back to your own experience then with playing multiple sports as a young kid, mm-hmm. and you kind of look at how the basketball landscape is and basically the entire youth sports landscape is, where there's such pressure and such, there's a lot of people out there that are specializing so early. Mm-hmm. And I think, and tell me if you agree, but I really think that the multi-sport track for kids who are young to be able to develop all those different athletic skills that you get by playing all these different sports really, I think, benefits kids. And I really wish we could somehow educate parents that that's the case. Would you agree with that statement and how that impacted you?
Yep, for sure. 1,000%. And it's just times are changed so much. And there seems to be such a focus on a kid getting an athletic scholarship. And so they think that the advantage is going to be with a personal trainer or the private shooting coach or the private strength and conditioning coach. And these kids are starting so early. And one, I think some of them aren't having a whole lot of fun doing that because they're, 7 years old going to do strength conditioning workouts. And two, it's just that they need to be kids and they need to, basketball, of course, is for an athlete. I think some of the best athletes in the world play the sport of basketball. But there's so many things that are just basketball specific that, like you said, if you play volleyball or you're playing football or soccer or softball, whatever it might be, that you're learning so many different motor skills that maybe basketball doesn't have. And you just look at like some of the greatest footwork people of all time, and they played soccer growing up, or they played, whatever other sports growing up. And some of the best athletes in the world have played multi-sports. And so I think it's super, super important that, one, we let kids be kids, and two, we let them just kind of participate in whatever they want. And then they funnel out on their own. I played everything young, but everybody knew I wanted to play basketball. So you let me do that on my own once I get to high school, where I need to start making a little more of an effort on just my craft. But I played everything up until that point. So I didn't necessarily enjoy all of it, but I loved competing and I loved sports. And I really do think that it benefits you.
Yeah, I think that's huge. What you said that I really like there is that it's kid driven in mm-hmm. that, you had an opportunity and got exposed to a bunch of different sports and played a whole bunch. And then eventually you figured out for yourself that, hey, basketball is the thing that I want to pursue. Mm-hmm. And it didn't come from your dad or your mom or somebody else pressuring you to do it. It was just, hey, this is what I love to do. And so these other things are going to kind of fall by the wayside. But the fact that you had them all in your background allowed you to build that wide range of athleticism. And one of the things that I also think is a lot of times important that sometimes people overlook is the fact that, let's say that basketball is your main sport, but now I also play soccer and I also play softball. Well, maybe I'm one of those other teams. I'm not the star, or I'm not the best, or I'm mm-hmm. in a different type of role. And I also think it makes you a more empathetic teammate when you get to a team where, you know, you've kind of been in these other situations, you've been exposed to different coaching styles. And to me, there's just so many benefits to kids, especially younger kids, playing lots of things, getting exposure to lots of things. And then eventually parents kind of staying out of the way and letting the child pick where they want to end up.
Yeah, that would be the dream scenario, right?
Wouldn't it? No question. No question. Yeah, no question about that. So how there at Sierra Canyon, just I want to jump ahead, even though we'll probably jump back after this, but the question kind of fits in with what we're talking about. When you talk about what you're doing there at Sierra Canyon, and you have obviously a bunch of different varsity sports, and how does it work in terms of coaches sharing athletes in your career? Mm-hmm. Have you come across the coaches that have been willing? Because I know a lot of times there are places where coaches get very provincial with their athletes. They're like, I only want my kids playing basketball, or I'm the soccer coach, I only want them playing soccer. So how does that work, and how do you approach that with other coaches?
Yeah, I think one, Sierra Canyon is just a very unique place to work. We are a very small independent private school. So our high school enrollment is roughly 420 students. And I would say a good at least half of those students are participating in athletics. So we have to share athletes. Like if we didn't, we wouldn't be as successful as we are. And we're not just a successful basketball program. I mean, our volleyball team has won a state championship in the last 3 years. Our football team has won numerous state championships. Boys basketball won a state championship this year. Girls soccer has won state championships. So we're really talented in all of our teams. And so it's kind of almost a part of our athletic department mission statement that I don't think our AD is hiring somebody if they're coming in with the attitude of, you know, I got to basically hog my kids, you know. Football players play lacrosse and they play basketball and they play baseball and they play everything. And so similar for us as well. I have a much smaller team. So soccer probably carries the biggest in terms of our four main female sports. But I had a kid this year who played soccer and basketball and for us in California, and they're in the same season. So I had a girl who that's what she wanted to do. She loves soccer. She played soccer growing up, but she also wanted to play on the basketball team. And so me and the soccer coach made it work. You know, she'd go to a soccer practice. If she could leave early, she'd come to ours. If she could only make one, she'd go to one. If she's out of town for one, she's out of town. You know, so it's just, we're at a really unique place because like you said, that definitely doesn't happen. I've actually never really seen it happen in the magnitude that it is happening at Sierra Canyon. I've had numerous girls that are volleyball players as well. And, you know, so it's how we work well together with all of our other coaches. We just have like a really unique, support system there that we all really get along, that we truly do. You know, it's not, oh, we're family. Like a lot of people say that we're family family here. Like Sierra Canyon actually is family. You know, the coaches hang out outside of, you know, Sierra Canyon, and we all get along and we all talk sports and we all support each other. And, so it's just a really fortunate, unique environment. Which is one of the extra positives of my experience there. But we are fortunate because we do have that support from our administration, from the other coaches, and from our athletic director.
Yeah, that's very cool that you were able to work that out for the girl so she could play multiple things. Again, you often think about multiple sports being different seasons. You don't often think of them as being the same season. So that's great that you guys are able to have that type of relationship between the coaching staffs and with the players. And again, ultimately, when it's for the good of the kid, that's really what it comes down to. And, and you want to make sure that, you know, it fits. And so that the other kids who are on the team, I'm sure, understand that, you know, when she's missing a half hour here, she has to miss something there. You know, I'm sure the communication piece of it, which we'll get to at some point, is very important. I want to jump backwards though, and ask you about when you first started thinking about, hey, I want to maybe get into coaching for my profession. Like at what point in your playing career did you start to think, boy, coaching seems like it might be an avenue that I want to pursue?
Yeah. And you might think that I'm absolutely making this up, but it was fourth grade and it was like immediate. It was so obvious to me. I was, you know, I'd come home from practices, whatever. And this is like very low recreation basketball at the time. And I come home from practice and I had a mirror in my room and I would just draw with markers that you could erase afterwards. And I would go home and just draw stuff, try to think of drills, try to draw plays. And I was never like going to the coach like, hey, this is my awesome play. But that was just how my mind was working. Like at just such a young age, I like saw the game so well. And who knows what I thought of. I didn't like keep any of those things on napkin.
Yeah, you should have saved yeah. them. You should have had a notebook full of them. That would have been entertainment probably for you at this point, right? Yeah, there you go.
Exactly.
That's awesome.
But yeah, I just knew, and I had a great mentor that was the PE coach / after school coach of all of our sports at my K through eighth grade experience. And he was just this young, awesome guy and just a great mentor. Looking back at the time, you know, he was just more of like a big brother to all of us. But he was just such a great coach, you know, to this day, I still call the guy coach. And he was just somebody who just kind of, I was like, oh, I want to be called coach one day because coach is so cool, you know? So it was that experience of having somebody who was an awesome coach. And then he really was really knowledgeable about all the sports, and specifically basketball. So he would, you know, work with me extra outside of school and different things like that. And, really shared his knowledge with me. And, so that was the experience. And so I'd say it was at a really young age in fourth grade that I knew that's what I wanted to do.
Yeah, I think that's probably pretty unusual, I'm guessing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. And then I actually did it. I didn't
right, exactly.
Like, you know, a veterinarian yeah, no, that, or something.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's very cool. Very cool. So when you think back to that coach that worked with you in that K to eight school, what are some things, obviously he cared about you and obviously he invested time with you and obviously he understood and was able to teach things about basketball and the other sports. But do you remember anything specific that made him such a great coach, or something beyond what I just said that kind of led you to really look up to him and think of him as that mentor, that father figure?
Yeah, for sure. Like you said, you touched on all the big things that when you're a young kid or you're a high school kid or a college kid, it really doesn't matter. Everybody's looking for somebody that they can trust and somebody that they really feel cares for them, right? So he definitely displayed that to all of us. And like I said, he coached football and basketball and soccer. He did everything. So those things definitely existed. But one thing that kind of stands out looking back is that he was very good at specifically making me really humble. And so I learned like the lessons of leadership and just like accountability and like time management and all those things that are important for being an eventual, you know, high school team captain or college athlete or eventual coach. I learned those things at a really young age because I've never really had these conversations with him, but either he saw that in me that I was eventually going to be on this type of a path, or that's just maybe how he was. But I remember like he wrote in my yearbook in like seventh grade or eighth grade. I just remember the words like, stay humble. Like you're going to have a great high school career. You're going to have a great, you know, future in basketball and just stay humble and be a leader and just continue to listen to other people. So it was really cool to hear those things at a young age. And some kids might not appreciate that or hear it or see it, or they might be like, what is this guy? What does humble even mean? You know, they might not even understand.
Right.
But for somebody to take that time to give you like the really important life lessons, that sports teach us so well. And some kids never receive those lessons very well. So for him to give me those, and then for me to be able to accept them a little better was pretty special at the time.
Yeah. To get that as a young kid, to be able to have somebody who already at that age is kind of pouring into you with their ways of teaching those life lessons and getting you to understand things that, you know, maybe might be considered too advanced for a kid who was in mm-hmm. sixth, seventh grade. You know, yeah. A lot of times I think we think of those kids and we're not always trying to teach those life lessons. It's one of the things that I know, and I've said this on the podcast before, but I've definitely changed and matured in my handling of kids and as a coach and the things that I do, because mm-hmm. if I go back to, you know, when I was 25, 26 years old, I certainly was not focused on teaching life lessons or building character. Not that those things weren't important to me, but they just weren't on the radar in the same way mm-hmm. that they are as I've matured. And so the fact that you were able to be under his tutelage and be with somebody who was able to impart those things to you, and then obviously as a kid, you were receptive to hearing those messages, I'm sure just continued to point you down, you know, whatever path you were kind of winding towards, mm-hmm. he continued to kind of narrow your focus to get you to think about some of those things that I'm sure today are still part of what you do on a daily basis trying to get those same messages across to the girls that you're fortunate enough to work with and that they're fortunate enough to have you as their coach for sure.
Yeah, definitely, for sure.
So if after you go and you get done with your high school playing career, what comes next for you?
So after high school, I got a scholarship opportunity and actually turned down my dream school of going to USC, University of Southern California. It just wasn't the right fit for me basketball wise. And I have no regrets about turning down that offer, but I accepted a scholarship to Pepperdine. And so I actually played there for 2 years. I completely blew out my knee at the end of my freshman season, like tore everything, ACL, LCL, PCL, MCL, that's good stuff. So
fun. That's a good one.
Yes. And so I went through the rehab process and, I'm a religious girl. And so I just kind of felt that I was being pushed quicker into my coaching, debut than, allowing my playing debut or my playing career to end a little bit earlier than anticipated. So, came back for my sophomore year and just decided, that I was ready to start coaching instead of playing.
And so your first coaching job is where?
First coaching job, I was, 18 years old still and, sophomore in college. So I came back, I ended up transferring, to a school that was a little closer to home. And I got my old high school, hired me as the JV coach. So I was 18 years old coaching JV basketball, for my old high school. And
wait a second, you were coaching them and you probably played with some of them, like when they were freshmen, right?
Well, for the JV kids, cause I was so I'm a sophomore in college, but I'm still 18. So I'm like turning 19.
Okay.
So I was young for my grade. And then I had never, these were JV kids. So they're freshmen and sophomores. So I had never gone to high school with any of them. Yeah, but sounds like I would, right? I'm 18. So most people are, you know, you're graduating high school at that time. So I actually didn't, I knew some of the kids that were on the varsity, but I didn't know the kids that I was coaching myself. But they were aware of who I was because I had graduated from that school.
Right.
Yeah.
So what do you remember about that first experience walking into your first practice? What were you nervous about? What were you pretty confident that you could handle? And then we'll get into kind of how you've transformed from there.
Yeah, I would say that I was pretty confident just in terms of I was excited. And, you know, now I get to coach. So I was pretty excited. I think the only thing I was nervous about was that I was going to now be coaching with my high school coaches. And these guys are legendary. And Kevin Kiernan, who I played for, this year just recently surpassed the number for the all-time wins in California history. So I played for a very legendary high school coach in California. And so now I'm 18, had graduated only, you know, 2 years ago from him. And now I'm in a sense his equal, like I'm on his staff. Right. So it was just a very, like, are they going to judge me every day? Are they going to talk mess about me every day? Are they evaluating me? Like, you know, so that was probably the only thing that I was really nervous about. But they made me feel pretty comfortable and they always kind of made me feel like I knew what I was doing basketball wise. So I was never, too concerned about that. And then the only other thing was just like, how will the girls respond to me? Because I am so close to their age. But I'm trying to remember back because now I just finished my 15th year coaching high school basketball. So trying to remember back to those kids, and I'm pretty sure they were pretty receptive and they worked really hard for me and we had a really good year and we had fun. And so, yeah, I think it went well.
So real quick, how much autonomy did they give you to coach that team? Like, I know you probably were following the head coach's system, but how much were you able to inject your own kind of flavor into it?
100%. Yeah, 100%. We didn't have to run any of the same stuff, which I ultimately did because that was the system that I knew, you know, but for the most part, it was you can do what you want.
That's cool, because then you got a chance to really get your feet wet and get inside. What was it like to go sort of, I'm going to use the word behind the scenes, where you had been a player? And so obviously as a player, your perspective of what things are like is different than when you flip over to the coaching side. So what were some things that if you can remember back, like what surprised you about coaching and being a part of the staff that maybe you didn't realize when you were playing was going on that was different from what you expected?
Well, one, to give a small background story, my high school coach and I didn't have the greatest relationship. He was really, really tough. So it was an interesting development that this guy who like cursed me out 2 years ago is now like my boss in a sense. Right. And you know, things didn't really end very well for me as a senior, just in terms of, you know, of we didn't win and, you know, it's all my fault and that kind of stuff. So,
Understood. So
it was really interesting. Now we're great friends. He's one of my biggest mentors. We compete against each other. We've coached against each other. So it's just really interesting how it's come full circle. But so that's the backstory. So coming into it, it was almost like there was fear there because, you know, this guy used to be so mean to me.
So did you have doubt? Did you have doubt about going back? I mean, when you were thinking about doing it, like, how did the offer even come to pass? Like, did you go to them? Did you go to him? Did he come to you?
Came to me. Yeah. Okay. And there was a very, again, looking back now, there was like a very mature decision on my part because I really felt like he really hated me. And so there was this now the whole coach thing, and like you said, the aspects that we don't realize when we're players. Now I have to realize that he was in his own way, which he can either agree or disagree with is the right way, that he was trying to push me and get the most out of me, make me mentally tough, do all that kind of stuff as a player. And so just in a short 2 years later, I had to respect that as like, that was his answer of why, you know, I was kind of treated the way I was treated, or how all of us were really coached the way that he coached us. And so it was like, he's not a horrible person. He's actually a great person. But I didn't know that at the time. All I knew of him was that he was just this big, big mean dude. Right. And that he just likes to yell at me all the time. And yeah. School, oh, right. He was very old school. Yes.
Is he still old school now?
No, he's changed. He has four kids and his daughter actually plays for him, and very different coach from what he was like 20 years ago.
That's a credit to him that he's been able to evolve. Cause I think that's, you know, we could talk a little bit about this as we move forward, but mm-hmm. certainly there's been an evolution in coaching in terms of just what we talked about before, where, you know, incorporating life lessons and making sure that you build relationships and being concerned with players more off the floor and not just what they can provide to you on the court. So I think that the old school ways of coaching, you know, it's kind of a dying breed.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, we brought up earlier, one of the key things that I think that a kid wants to see from their coach is that they care. And I never would have said that he cared for any of us. Like, that was just, we didn't necessarily feel that way. Looking back, I'm certain he cared for us. I know how great of a guy he is, you know, and that his ways were just his ways. And that's why, how he was trying to get the most out of us. And, but you know, that's why we were so different, because I'm a little bit different in terms of that. I try to show my players that I care, for them. And again, he is very different now. So it is major credit to him that he has changed, and probably just sees the difference. You know, again, he's got grown daughters now, and it's just a whole different life than, you know, when he was a young coach.
Registration is now open at www.headstartbasketball.com for this summer's Head Start Basketball Camps. We'll be hosting camps this summer in Strongsville, Westlake, Avon Lake, Oberlin, Brunswick, Highland Heights, Mentor, and Hudson. At Head Start Basketball, we care deeply about making a positive impact on the lives of young basketball players, both on and off the court. It's through building strong relationships with our players, parents, and coaching staff that we are able to use the game of basketball to enrich the lives of those we interact with, both inside and outside of our organization. We believe that our attention to detail, our growth mindset, and our commitment to lifelong learning allows us to help our players achieve their fullest potential. We are passionately committed to providing players, parents, and coaches with everything they need to reach their goals. These core values run through everything we do. Check out our website, www.headstartbasketball.com, and discover why you should attend a Head Start Basketball Camp this summer. Hope to see you there.
So what were those behind-the-scenes conversations like in the coach's office before, after practice, before, during games, that first year for you, in terms of just, again, what you learned behind the scenes that you didn't realize when you were playing?
Well, the biggest thing I would probably say is that you just realize how how hard and stuff that kids are not going. Like when you're playing and you're getting yelled at for not going 100% or not doing this or not, you're like, I am. Like I'm trying
right,
so
sure
hard.
Right, sure I am.
And now your coach, you're like, oh my gosh, these kids aren't going hard at all. They might think they are. They, you know, it's just, that part's very different. So just hearing like the coaches kind of talk about that aspect of things and like their frustration level and, you know, what a bad practice is to a coach compared to what a bad practice is to a player. Those types of things were always kind of fascinating. But since I wasn't so far from removed from the program, you know, it was easy to jump into just kind of their system and knowing things. And again, I always felt I had a good grasp on it as a player. So none of that was really brand new or alarming, with those types of things. But yeah, it's just really that difference of how coaches see things versus how players see things. And I really respected the entire coaching staff, just how much time they put into practice planning and game prep and all of that those different aspects of the game that you kind of take advantage of your coaching staff as a player. You know, you don't necessarily realize, you know, all the efforts that they're doing. And at those times when I was in high school, to watch film on an opponent wasn't super common because of the time that it took.
Right,
and
exactly.
So I remember like we'd bring in the little roll-in TV that the school would have, you know, around on the little car, of course. And
had
the VHS thing. And
I was going to say the VCR.
The VCR, yep. And the coach would, you know, have marked and recorded of a recording of a record. Like it was crazy looking back now that you realize how much effort these guys put into getting us prepared for a game. And now it's so much easier with things like obviously with filming and huddle and crossover and those types of programs. And, so those were also things that I was like, wow, you do all of that? Like, geez.
Right.
You know, when you're just watching the film on TV, you can kind of tell some things. Like I remember being like, geez, we have to keep pausing and rewinding and like, you know,
and overshooting by 30 seconds. Oh
yes.
We went too far. Now we got to watch this play 17 times. That's not the play that we're trying to
so
watch.
True.
I remember
so
those days
true.
Well.
Yes.
I remember those days well. Yeah, we've certainly come a long way since that, for sure.
Oh, yes.
It's a much, much...
I'm way happier I'm coaching in 2019 than in 1975 or whatever.
Absolutely. It's a much more pleasurable experience to deal with the film, at least on the film side of it.
At least on the film side. Yeah, exactly.
Sure, for sure. So if you think about where you were at that time to kind of how you progressed through your career, what are some of the things that you've learned over time that you feel like you're a lot better at today than you were that first day you walked in as an 18-year-old coaching the JV team at your high school?
Oh man, that is, that's hard. The first thing that comes to my mind is patience. I coached for a lot of kind of the old school. I played for a lot of the old school coaches. So I always had that kind of the yelling and the, you know, let's run a lot for mistakes and the discipline and all that kind of stuff. I came from a lot of those types of coaches throughout my career, whether that was a club coach or a high school coach or an AAU coach or whatever. So that was, I'm not going to say that's all I knew, because I did have some that weren't exactly that way. But I really, that's what I knew. And so I tried to kind of coach the same type of a way. And there was lots of yelling and kind of, I'm the tough guy and you'll do what I say sort of a thing. But I thought I presented it in a different way. And, so one that I've just kind of changed the way that I coach in certain regards. I still feel like I require a lot. I feel like I'm a disciplinarian. I feel like, I get a lot out of my kids, but I feel like I don't have to yell at them for sure. Or demean them or do any of those types of things to get them to play hard. So that would be one thing. And just the patience of when you're 18 and whatever, say I drop a play and the kids aren't paying attention to the timeout. Like that's like pretty frustrating. It's always
right.
Pretty frustrating. But just now knowing that something like that is happening, I feel like I have a pretty high emotional intelligence. And so I feel like I read kids really well, just people really well. And, I know that each kid can't be coached the same way, learned that quickly. And, the aspect of parents and that everybody's parents are also different and that different things might be going on at home and that can affect their day and all those types of things. So really learning how to coach the person, no matter what type of a basketball player they are, that they're a person first. And I've really tried to learn that over the last 15 years. And but man, there's been so many life lessons. It's just coaching lessons and growing pains and things that you've learned throughout. But I think for the for me, the biggest thing is probably just that emotional part, the emotional part of coaching the player. Just that they go through so many different ups and downs, especially with high school girls, that you really learn to like kind of dial in every day. You know, sometimes if you're having an overall bad practice as a team, it might be just one kid had a really bad day and they might be a big part of the team, and that negative energy or whatever can kind of just rub off really quickly in a team of 10 girls, you know? And so instead of yelling at everybody and making everybody run and doing all this stuff, like just pull the kid aside and say, "Hey, what happened today? Are you okay?" And that one little conversation might change our entire practice instead of just sitting there and being angry at the world, right? So just a lot of just attention to them as people instead of them as players.
So do you do that through just careful observation and daily conversations? Like how much contact do you have with your girls? I know you're the middle school athletic director, correct?
Correct. I'm an associate high school athletic director, middle school
gotcha.
Athletic director.
And okay.
Then, yeah. So I am on campus. My office is in the gym. The flexibility of our school is really cool that the girls have free periods throughout the day and they're different and different times and all that stuff. So they pop in my office all the time. They eat lunch with me. They come in just to say hi, all different types of things. So I see them often. So with my 7 years at Sierra, it's been a lot easier to kind of get that thumbprint on who they are as people, because I'm on campus so much and have the time to talk to them and say hi to them and observe them and get to know them as people.
Yeah. I think that contact during the day to me is really, really important. I think that it's one of the things that if you look at the landscape of high school basketball kind of across the country, if you compare it to, let's say, 25 or 30 years ago, I think there's a lot more coaches today that are not in the school building on a day-to-day mm-hmm. basis.
Yes.
That, you know, have outside jobs and they just don't have the same, ability to connect with their players. I know, like I was a varsity assistant coach at the school district where I teach for 13 years, and I teach in elementary school. My school is literally right across the parking lot from the high school. Mm-hmm. But even just being that close, there was still, I felt like, a disconnect between me and the players. I wasn't as connected as the varsity head coach and our JV coach, who were both over in the high school building, who could have conversations with those kids every single day, walking down the mm-hmm. hallway and in the lunchroom, and just, you know, some of the things that you described. And so I think that daily connection is so, so important. It's a trend that, you know, I don't think it's going to probably be reversed, just because of, I mean, we could get into lots of issues about why people are coaching or are leaving coaching and, you know, mm-hmm. all those kinds of things. But I think the trend is only going to continue. And I don't think it's the best trend for the kids. Cause I think that you don't build the same relationship with your coach when you only see them for, you know, 2 hours on the practice floor and you're not getting that daily interaction, you know, in the classroom, which it sounds like you're able to have through, yeah. you know, kids coming in and talking to you and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely. I totally agree with everything you said. Yeah.
So if you think back to the time when you were an assistant before you came over to Sierra Canyon, you were at Mater Dei, right?
Correct. At Troy and then at Mater Dei.
Got it. So you, as an assistant coach, if you think back to that time, what are some things that you learned as an assistant or some things that were important to you and your role as an assistant coach that maybe now made you a better head coach, like maybe gave you a better understanding of what your assistants need to do or have to do? Can you talk a little bit about what you learned during your time as an assistant coach?
Yeah. I mean, there's so much. I don't know if I'm going to answer this, what you're looking for. So just let me know if I'm on the wrong path.
Take whatever direction you want.
But it's so different. And again, so I was an assistant for my former high school coaches, like that was the whole coaching staff. And they gave me so much responsibility. You know, I was able to run the offense for like a national championship team, and it was whatever I called. So Alicia, you're in charge of the offense. And if you call something, I'm not going to override you as the head coach. And so one, Kevin's humbleness was just incredible to see. So again, this is the same guy that, you know, 10 years prior, I think is like the worst human being in the world. Right. And so just to be able to see, one, how humble he is just because of his accolades and success as a coach. That was always incredible. And just that he would give his team of staff team so much responsibilities. And he had worked with Pete for many years, I would say, you know, 20 and they're going on 30 years or whatever now. And so, so they had this major trust and this major build. I came in when he was at Modern Day, when his wife left to go take a college job. So now I'm like filling in his wife's spot, you know, and everything that she had done for the team. And she was the positive person and the one that the girls would talk to as the only female on the staff and those types of things. So they were really set in their ways. They knew they'd been together for many, many, many years. They knew what they were doing. They were highly successful. They had their ways. Everything was great. And so I'm coming in still young and, you know, having experienced with them before, but they left to go to Modern Day and I stayed at Troy. And so I was with another coach there as well. So we had this 3-year separation basically. And so just kind of, again, the amount of responsibility that they allowed me to have and that Kevin saw that I was going to be a head coach one day. And so he allowed me to really just grow, you know, under his direction and just, he really trusted me to just take whatever types of responsibilities I wanted, whether that's, you know, running a practice or doing the practice plan or a game scout, or, you know, I was had the game scout for the CIF championship game. That's crazy. So just the amount of trust, really doesn't matter the age of the coach or how many years of experience, just his trust and his staff. I think that's really important to see as a head coach, giving people responsibility and not trying to, you know, dictate and do everything yourself and micromanage and do all that, that he was really allowed us to all feel like we were part of the staff. I think something that he did well that I probably don't is that he would communicate with me you're doing a really good job, and kind of remind me of different things. Or after a game, if it was my game scout, hey, you won us the game today, or, you know, something like that, which when I'm young, you know, I don't know if my coaching staff now needs to hear that, but when I was young, that was a really cool thing to hear, you know?
Right.
So just lots of really little things like that, to pick up on. And, just definitely for me as a coach was the biggest thing was just that he allowed me to grow so much and to just learn on different aspects, whether that's game prep or practice prep or the outside stuff, running camps, you know, private lesson training, all that kind of stuff, that he just allowed me to kind of spread my wings, for lack of a better term.
So when you take over at Sierra Canyon, are you immediately comfortable with doing those two things that you described, or was it a case where, okay, this is my first head coaching job, my mm-hmm. first opportunity to kind of take over a program? It would seem to me, and I know that this is just me speaking for me, that when I would get that first opportunity, it would almost seem like I would want to be so hands-on on everything to make sure that it all went exactly the way that mm-hmm. I wanted it to. It's one thing to have an established program maybe and have a new assistant come in and, okay, we're going to turn this over to you because this is the way it's always been. Mm-hmm. But I would think as you come in as a brand new coach to your very first experience, mm-hmm. that might have been difficult. Did you find that to be the case, or did you feel like you had already internalized those lessons to the point where you could come in and be like, okay, I know I have to grow my staff and give them responsibility, and I know I have to, you know, I know I have to give them praise and that kind of thing. How did you approach that when you first came out of the gate?
So I had a really unique experience that kind of makes all that a moot point, because when I came in, I didn't have a staff. So I had to obviously find some people. And so I couldn't find anybody. I had moved. So location wise, I had moved out to the Valley from Orange County. So I didn't really know anybody in the area. I didn't really know much that was going on. And so, you know, I had to try to find a staff, and not too many people applied for the job. And I couldn't really find anybody because this is my first head coaching job. And you know, you want to hire somebody that you vibe with or that you're going to enjoy spending, you know, more time with than, you know, than your boyfriend or whatever. So
right.
I had to find somebody, and I didn't really feel comfortable with anybody that had come through for interviews and stuff. So I ended up hiring the volleyball assistant coach. And the only reason why, she had played some high school basketball, but she was a volleyball coach and she was just cool. She was my friend on campus,
right.
She knew some of the kids cause she had been on the volleyball staff for a couple of years. And I was like, can you just take some stats? And she was like, yeah, I mean, I can, I know what a rebound is. I'm like, okay, cool. And that was it. So she was my assistant coach the first year. We won a state championship. And, so I can't say that I gave anybody any responsibility because she literally was only taking stats because she was a volleyball coach.
So you got to micromanage everything whether you wanted to or not.
I got to do the whole shebang-a-bang, yeah, and I really enjoyed it. So unfortunately, I can't say that I did learn those lessons. And to be honest, I've really only had like one or two assistants every year. I've never had, 1 year we were fortunate to have a staff of five of us, but two people were volunteers and it was a 1 year unique situation. So, I've always only had one or two people. And so it's been very different. And I will say that is a hard lesson because when you're younger and this was my first job and I wanted to make sure I was doing things well and doing things right. And there wasn't that level of trust yet. There wasn't, I don't even know who, you know, these people are that are coming in for a year or whatever it might be, or they are the volleyball coach or whatever it is. That would have been really hard to do. Yeah, unfortunately I can't say I applied that lesson very well.
So that first year, obviously winning a state title, you had a very successful team and the program was in pretty good shape when you came in and walked into it. But what did you want to do to put your own footprint on it? What were some of the things that you said, this is what I want our program to be all about? And then how did you go about establishing that with the girls on your team?
For me, the biggest thing was that I wanted a culture change. So you said that they, you know, that assumingly, you know, we won a state championship my first year, that they were a successful program. They really weren't. We were a really young school. So even like this year is like our 12th graduating class. So we were a super young school, and had mild success as a small school, you know, a couple years prior. So, you know, again, the teams were really small. When I inherited the team, I had like five kids, on the roster and, you know, news that people were going to transfer out and all that stuff, of course. And, so we didn't really have much success. And so I had to come in and I knew I had some talented kids. But I had to come in and make them understand like what it was going to take to win championships, you know, and state championship was not my goal. It was just to make these kids work hard and, just give them probably an experience that they probably had not had before. And so for me, that was the biggest thing, just the culture change and coming in and making them know that I was going to be like their friend off their court, but that I was going to be very respected on the court and, that they were going to be disciplined and they were going to have to work really hard. And this was going to turn into like a year round program instead of a 3 month program or whatever it might've been before. I didn't make any assumptions with things that they were doing. I didn't ask any questions with things that they were doing before, but I made it very clear that things were probably going to change for them, you know, that they hadn't lifted weights before, they hadn't done strength and conditioning before, all those kinds of things that they were going to really learn what it was like to not only be an elite high school program, but they were going to be prepared to play at the next level.
If you're a basketball coach in the greater Cleveland area and you have a passion for teaching the game and might be interested in joining the Head Start Basketball Camp coaching staff this summer, please reach out to us via email at headstartbasketball@usa.net.
You have the strength and conditioning piece, you have the year-round piece. From a culture standpoint, how did you go about instilling that idea of discipline, that idea of hard work? Was there anything, I don't know, specific that you can point to? Was that just a daily reminder that's just like, this is the way we do things and we're doing that way every day, and eventually that message just sinks in? Or how do you go about transforming that culture into the disciplined, hardworking program that you envisioned on the day you took the job?
Yes. One thing is that I do want all those things that you mentioned. I wanted the kids to work hard. And so all that was part of the on the court culture change. But for me, one of my biggest things is I want to coach good kids, and I want to coach kids who want to play for me, and are just ultimately really good kids on campus. And so we did a lot of things that we did community service events. I made sure that they sent out like thank you notes if people came to their games, that they got to know the people on campus just as well as I had to get to know the people on campus, that they had a great relationship with our custodian, that they realized, because we're at a pretty wealthy independent private school. It doesn't mean that all of our kids are wealthy, but there's a lot of things that they probably take for granted, you know. So we have one guy who's been at the school and is like in charge of the gym, and he's phenomenal. He's just the best ever. And are the kids realizing that he's doing such a great job every single day to get their gym ready to practice. So little things like that. So for me, there was a lot of just change just in making them appreciative people, making them liked and respected on campus from their teachers and from staff members, that they weren't going to eventually just win and they were going to be, you know, this great athletic team, that they were going to be girls that were respected throughout the community. And eventually, if I could build that, my thought would be that people were going to want to come because these were good kids and they were enjoyable to watch on the court, but they were really enjoyable off the court as well. So for me, that was a really big focus. It wasn't necessarily just the on the court and the discipline and all that stuff. But in regards to the on the court stuff, it was just things that I had kind of known. And I think the only thing that might've slightly separated us was, you know, we did a 6 a.m. conditioning thing in the mornings preseason wise. And that was just to try to get them into that kind of just mental toughness difference of being, you know, a year round athlete that I don't think they were used to being. And so just a couple of different little things that we tried here and there, and some things I've kept, some things I've gotten rid of. But again, I think for me, the most important part was just how they were developing as people too.
Okay. So jump back to that. Why was that so important to you? And why did you feel like that was so critical to the program success? What in your history or in your mind coming into that made you think and made you believe that that was going to be one of the keys to getting the program success? Cause I agree with you 100%. I think that's something mm-hmm. that a lot of times, you know, we tend to overlook, and somebody gets a new job and they're so focused on what goes on the floor, and they're so focused on that they forget about, you know, the off the court piece, which is whether that's community service, whether that's, like you said, writing thank you notes, whether that's cleaning up the locker room, whether that's leaving a place better than we found it, whether that's mm-hmm. thanking the custodian. All those things are things that I'm with you 100% that I think if you're going to have a successful program. And when I define successful program, I'm not just talking about, you know, we're winning state championships or we're going undefeated and we're winning lots of games. But to me, successful happens when 10 years from now, one of those kids calls you up and says, "Hey coach, I just got my new job and I got married. I had a kid and, you know, I'm having this success long-term." To me, that's what a successful program is. And I think that all the things you described are the key to making that happen. So can you kind of pinpoint maybe why you felt like that was so important? Like what in your background led you to believe that that was going to be the thing that was really going to make your program successful?
I would say first thing that comes to my mind is probably selfish on my part. Like I want to enjoy my job. And I think most coaches do. Like that's why I'm coaching basketball, right? That was my passion. That's what I wanted to do since I was young. And I think so many coaches now they love basketball or they love football or they love soccer, but they hate coaching right now. And that's because of the kids that they coach or the parents that they coach or just, you know, different problems with administration or the school or whatever it might be. And so I said, if this is what I'm going to do and I'm not going to make very much money to do it, I'm going to really love the hell out of my job. Right. And if I'm working with sour kids and sour parents, then my life's probably gonna be pretty miserable. So I think for me, it was selfish. It was, I'm going to try to get these kids to be super enjoyable. And it's not that they weren't, because I, again, didn't know them, but that was going to be my thing. Like if I can try to make them my best friends, then
right,
I'm going to probably have a great time here. Right. And it was easy because they were already good kids. They did have great parents. Like all that stuff was already, it was already there. I was just trying to make little friends of mine, you know,
it's basically right. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm an orchestrator, you know? And so I would think since I've never really been asked that question, that was probably it. You know, I wanted to try to find, make this experience as enjoyable as possible. That was probably it. And I don't know if I can really pinpoint back to my own history. We recently just had our banquet for this past season. And I just kind of concluded the night saying, cause it's our banquets are pretty special for us. And, whether it's a winning season or not. And, so the kids always end with, the juniors talk about the seniors or whatever, and the seniors talk about the coaches and blah, blah, blah. And usually there's always a whole bunch of crying at our banquets.
Right.
It's ridiculous. Right.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And so I just kind of ended with, you know, I hope this is why you guys realize this is why you came to Sierra Canyon. And we preach the word family again. And I don't use the term lightly because I know everybody lots of huddles bring it in across the country, and they say family on three, and everybody says family. And I really believe that that's what I wanted to create. At the time, I wasn't married. At the time, I wasn't dating somebody. You know, there's all that stuff. And so if this is going to be my actual family, I better really enjoy better, these people. That
better
I'm
love them,
out.
Right? You better,
yes,
you better love them.
Exactly. And so at our banquet, you know, I just concluded with, so this is hopefully you guys can actually visibly see, because this is parents and grandparents and all that stuff. And you guys can see that hopefully this is the reason that you did come to Sierra Canyon. This is more about, you know, less about the state championship and more about how sad these kids are that their seniors just are graduating or, you know, whatever it might be. And then I said, my four best friends were on my high school basketball team. And so to this day, you know, one lives in New York and three of us are still in California, and we've all been bridesmaids in each other's weddings, and I've seen them, you know, have kids and all that stuff. And I said, that's what I got from basketball. You know, it's more than just, it's about the friendships and about the relationships. And so I think if I can pinpoint that that's probably what it was for me, that I wanted to take what I had gotten from my experience, and I wanted these kids to have a similar experience if I could control it in any way, that they would be friends for life and they could find those types of relationships that would be valuable for them in their future, whether that was in our high school experience or if it was them going on to college and finding that, that they would just be, you know, happy people, because that's more important than anything, right?
It is. It really is. I'll share a little story that, I mean, I think I've told it on the podcast before, but I think it's relevant here again, that I have a daughter who's, she's in ninth grade and she plays on her school team, and she has friends on the school team, but not friends that are necessarily like the ones that you just described. But she also plays AAU basketball, and I've been fortunate enough to coach her team for the last, this will be our third year together. So they started playing together when they were in seventh grade. And these are girls from all different communities, and it's not an elite level team by any means, but it's just a great group of girls who, every one of them, just like you described with your team, are just nice kids, good people, and great teammates. They love being around each other, and they're all friends. And again, they don't see each other all the time because they're at different schools, and they have a big long text chain that they're always connected no matter where they are. They're always connected. And those friendships that my daughter's been able to build, and I'd like to take at least a small amount of credit for putting the group together and then doing some of the things like you described, which is, you know, doing some team building things and getting them together and, you know, getting them involved in, you know, some of the charity stuff that we do and that kind of thing. And it's brought them all together in such a way that I can totally see what you described, where eventually they're going to be bridesmaids in each other's weddings, and they're going to be there for the birth of each other's kids. And they're just all super connected in a way that I would have never, ever in a million years imagined that 3 years ago when they first got together, that this was going to be what was going to happen with this team, was going to happen for my daughter. And the basketball side of it, you know, again, my daughter could be done playing in a year or two. She may not even finish out and, you know, make a varsity team by the time she's in 11th grade. But I do know that she's going to still remain friends with these girls who she's met through the game of basketball. And really, just like you're describing, that's what it's all about. Now, you hope that winning is obviously a byproduct, and my situation as an AAU coach is different than yours or someone else's who's a high school coach, where there's, you know, there's obviously at least a small amount of pressure to put a winning product out on the floor as well. But I think that what sometimes gets overlooked, and I think it's a credit to what you've done and how you did it, is that those things that some people look at as being auxiliary or ancillary to the process are sometimes the things that are really the base foundation, where you can't really even build a basketball player or a basketball team until you put that foundation of, again, just being a quality person who somebody would want to spend time around. Until you put that in place, I think you're silly to start to try to build the basketball piece of it until you build the teamwork, the person, and all that stuff. And I think you did it the right way. And not that my opinion means a whole lot, but I do think that that the way you did it is the right way to approach it, for sure.
Thank you.
So now, if we think about all those things that you did that first year, was there anything that you did in that first season or two that now you look back on and you think, maybe if I would have done something differently, we would have gotten to the point where I wanted us to be faster? Is there anything that you looked at as maybe something that you would have changed in that year or two that you might have done differently if you had it to do over again?
I don't think so. I mean, we had a really successful year, and the growth was pretty quick. Again, I had some pretty talented kids. So I don't really know if I could, you know, when I went back and evaluated that year, I mean, it was a good year. So I don't really know if I could say I wish this would have happened sooner or that. Because for the most part, it kind of was going at the rate that it needed to. And yeah, so I don't think so.
Understood. All right, let's talk about this, that you mentioned it just briefly, but I think it's an issue that all high school coaches are dealing with. And again, I'm not sure that the word dealing with is the right way to put it, but talk about how you engage the parents of your players in your program. Because I think that's such an important part of building, like you said, the word family is often used, mm-hmm. but a lot of times we as coaches tend to kind of keep families at arm's length because mm-hmm. we look at them as meddling and kind of getting in the way and causing problems. So can you talk a little bit about what you've been able to do to make your parents feel a part of the basketball family that you've built there at Sierra Canyon?
Yeah, for sure. I think a couple things are coming to my mind, but one thing I actually used to get criticized a little bit for, because when I was younger, you know, just hanging out with the players too much, you know, and trying, I wasn't necessarily trying to be their friend. It wasn't like I was this, you know, Jekyll and Hyde on the court or off the court. It was just that I was closer to their age. I really enjoyed some of these kids and their personalities. And, you know, so after, you know, after practice or something, you know, let's go grab a bite to eat or something like that. And so every now and then you find somebody who doesn't really like that, you know, and, or it's, you know, you're hanging out with this group of kids too much and then, you know, there's five other ones over here, you know, whatever it might be. And so one thing that the old modern day coach would tell me was like, just keeping you, cause this is like, I think that that's a good thing, you know, cause of course he was never doing any types of relationship things like that. Right?
Right. Right. Right.
And he's like, so, you know, if one parent complains or, you know, whatever happens, he's like, I think that's part of you. Like, you don't do it in any sort of malicious way or to try to get a kid more playing time. You know, none of that's happening. You're just doing it naturally because that's your personality. So he kind of gave me that little thing. And I'm one of those people, I don't really like being disliked or hearing that I did something that, of course, wasn't in any sort of bad intent and it comes off as a bad intent or something like that, right? So I didn't take it well, you know, when I got told about it or whatever it might have been. So that's one thing, but I've continued to do that. And I think that goes into the, again, it's a very natural thing for me. So it's not like I'm seeking out to go take a kid to lunch or something to make them think I care about them. But because of just my relationships with my kids, the parents then can see like how much I care for their kids. You know, that I'll train a kid anytime if they ask me, you know, on my own team, like, hey coach, can we work out 6 a.m., 10 p.m. It doesn't matter. If they want to work out, I'll meet them in the gym. And that I'm never going to charge them a dollar where some people, you know, their own high school coaches are charging them to work out. So little things like that, where the parents just can see that. My first year at Sierra, I had a kid who had a divorced family, and mom lived, you know, 30 minutes away, and it was hard for her to come pick her kid up. I took her home almost every single day, and it's 30 minutes out of my way, you know, and I got to drive back home. I live 2 minutes from school. And I never asked for anything for it. I never thought that I needed anything for it. It was just like, hey, this kid needs to get home, so I'm going to take her home. And so just little things like that where the parents know how much you care for their kids off the court and just going to their home. And some people totally would disagree with this. Like, no, you should never have dinner with a family, or you should never go to their birthday party or whatever it might be. That's just always been so natural for me. Just, again, part of my personality, part of like my friendships. I love food and I love to eat and I love to hang out. And so I've never seen like a line, you know, between, well, this is my player, so I can't hang out with them, or I can't take them, you know, to a dinner, you know, or whatever it might be. I've just never, it's never been a line for me that I shouldn't cross. And that can be critiqued in whatever way that anybody wants. But I think for me, because of that, that again, the parents could kind of see how much I care for their kids, and the kids definitely know how much I care for them. So that's one thing. Specific things, like I have a family barbecue to start the year every year that I host, and so the whole family is invited. If you have siblings, not the whole family, so grandma and grandpas and cousins and stuff are invited, but if you have siblings and your parents or whatever, so you know, our teams are pretty small, but usually I'm hosting like 50 people or whatever, and just do a little barbecue, and we play cornhole, and we just have a good time. And so little things like that, and gift exchanges for Christmas, and, you know, just stuff, some stuff that I grew up with or some things that I took from other people. But I just think it goes back to that family environment, and some people don't want their parents anywhere near them, you know, and, I'm getting closer to the age now where I'm closer to the parents' age than I am to the kids' age now. So that's kind of a fun thing. And the parents are more my friends than the kids.
All right.
Are.
Little transition, right?
It's a little transition for me. But yeah, and we'll go out to eat after the games, and, you know, whoever can come, come, and if you can't, then you don't have to. But, there's just a lot of things that I do that some people might not think is the right way to do it. But for me, it's been very successful, and there's been some fallback, you know, cause you know, if I go take this kid out to lunch one day or take this two kids out to lunch because they're seniors, then some people might not like that or whatever it might be. But for the most part, I haven't really had too many negative experiences with the way I interact with them off the court. For me, it's just been more enjoyable because then you have those kids, like you said, 10 years down the road, you know, now I'm invited to their baby's, you know, first birthday and that kind of stuff. And I think it's truly because of the relationship I had with them off the court instead of just on the court.
Yeah. And I think you have to coach to your personality.
Yes.
And that's something that, you know, we've talked to some other coaches about that too, that kids can smell a fraud mm-hmm. from a mile away. And so if you don't coach the way that you are, and kids realize that and they figure it out pretty quickly. And I think it's a lot harder to have success trying to be someone else or trying to fit a certain mold as opposed to just doing the things that you believe is right. And one of the things I've always kind of told people is if you're doing things right and you're doing things the way you believe is the right way to do them, that not every single person is going to be happy with you. Because mm-hmm. exactly. there are always going to be people that disagree. And so you have to be able to put your head down on the pillow at night and know that you're doing what you believe is best for your kids, your program, yourself as the coach. And if you're doing that, I think that is really what leads to the coaches are most successful, because they're doing what they believe is right. And they're not mm-hmm. letting outside influences impact the way that they do it, because they're trying to be themselves.
Yeah.
Head Start Basketball is proud to announce our very first summer 3-on-3 league. Why 3-on-3? You get more touches on the ball. You get more decision-making opportunities on both offense and defense. Every player is involved in the action. There's better spacing and less congestion on the court. 3-on-3 is simply a great game for player development, and it's a lot of fun. Our league is for boys and girls in grades 3-8, and will be held at the Strongsville Recreation Center on Monday nights beginning June 10th. So grab some friends and get your team registered at www.headstartbasketball.com.
So, all right, let's talk a little bit about some of your experiences outside of Sierra Canyon. Talk about how you got involved with Snow Valley and just a little bit about what your experiences have been there, because we've had a bunch of guys on there who have been there and just rave about the experience. So I want to get your perspective as a female coach going to Snow Valley, what that experience has been like.
Yeah, you know, last year was crazy because I was the lead featured clinician out here, the one in California. And so the reason for me that was crazy, when I was in fifth grade, I participated in Snow Valley. I did the overnight camp. So that was really like my first like big camp and overnight camp. And I was like scared out of my mind because, you know, there's kids as old as high school, of course. And so we were probably one of the younger groups there at the time in fifth grade. And so it was probably one of the first times I was away. You know, I had a friend that went with me, but it was like, you know, you're away from your parents,
right, away
and
from parents,
all that
yep,
stuff. And
yep.
Yeah. And it was just a very, I just remember it was like Snow Valley and it just seemed so prestigious. And it was like the camp that was like, it starts at 6 a.m. and you don't go to sleep till midnight if you're a gym rat, you know? And, so just that experience as a camper, and now however many years later, I'm like the lead clinician at that camp, you know? And so that was like a really cool moment for me realizing that, last year. And, so the reason how I got involved as a clinician, just one of my really good coaching friends out here in California, has become the director of that camp. And so just, when I was in my young coaching days, I did some individual work with him, would train kids individually and some small group stuff. And, So he actually was one of the first people that got me really exposed into like private training, and learning that aspect, which is also kind of a fascinating thing, pulling, being an individual trainer and a high school coach, and kind of like pulling those two things together. And then I coached a club, helped him kind of start a club team, a club program, and all that stuff. So we become really good friends. And, so he's had me out there the last 3 years or so as a clinician. And, it's just like an incredible camp experience. And I think one of the, just the best things is, I'm pretty certain it's the longest running, camp of its kind in California for sure. So just the history behind it, the kids who have attended it, the clinicians who have, coached there, just so much history there. That's really awesome. And it's, it is really a prestigious thing. And so now looking back as a fifth grader and how like scared I was and how nervous I was because it was like so prestigious, it still holds that same weight, which is really cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. We're going to get an opportunity, I think, to go out to Iowa, after we had Coach Showalter on. We've, you know, had some other people come on with us, but he was gracious enough to allow Jason and I to come out. So we're going to be out there July, I think 17th through the 20th. And my son's in seventh grade. He's going to come with us. So we're going to make a little road trip to, from Ohio to Iowa. So we're excited to get out there and see what it's all about. We've heard so many great things about it that, you know, we're really looking forward to that opportunity to get out and be a part of it. Can you talk a little bit about your experiences with USA basketball, and again, how that connection came to pass, and then what you've been able to do, and possibly what you're hoping may transpire moving forward?
Yeah. That was a just absolutely an incredible experience. It was something that was kind of like on my bucket list of like coaching achievements. And so when I got the call, I was just like, wait, what? Like you, like, how is this happening? And I didn't know how it happened. Cause there's no application process. You don't like call somebody, say, hey, I'd be interested in coming and working this. I just got a call out of the blue, and I don't even think we had a successful year that year or anything. You know, it was just like, wait, huh? You're calling me? You know, it was just, it was like a really, you know, humbling experience that it was just like, wow, this is like actually happening. So like I said, it was like on my bucket list, but it was one of those things that's like, you know, it's just on there. Like, I don't know how I'm going to like actually make that happen, you know?
Right.
Cause I didn't know that, you know, there isn't a process. You just actually get recommended from somebody who's on a committee and that's it. And so that was just super cool. There was only four of us that got called to be like the court coaches. And then there was the actual staff that took the group of kids. They went to Argentina that year. And so it was just a incredible experience. Just being able to work with, the most elite kids of that class, you know, at the time in the country, and, just how they run things there at USA Basketball. And, Carol's just one of the most incredible humans that's participating in the basketball experience right now. And, just to be able to learn from people, and, you know, they had some Hall of Famers there that talked to the girls. And so just being able to listen to those people, and, but it's a grind, you know, it's not for, not for the faint of heart there, that, that you're grinding, you're on the court standing nonstop, and, you know, coaching these kids to try to help them make the team. And, you know, it's a really unique experience. And definitely something I hope I can participate in again, and hopefully can maybe be on a coaching staff that would take a team, you know, to try to go win a gold medal. And the extra cool part about that was this year I got chosen to coach at the Jordan All-American game. And these kids were the kids that I coached at the USA camp. So that was just like a really cool, like full circle moment that, you know, I got these huge bucket list items, and, you know, just being rewarded for, you know, the things that we've done at Sierra, and, that I already knew these kids, was really cool. Just to have like those two big experiences where like happened to be with kind of the same group of kids was really cool.
What were your impressions of, obviously you're bringing in, you know, those are some of the best girls across the country, and yeah, they're coming in and getting an opportunity to play and compete with one another. Mm-hmm. So what was that like from a coaching perspective, you getting a chance to work with players of that caliber? And obviously the players at your school are very talented and you've had a tremendous amount of success, but this is even another level probably beyond that in terms of every player on the court is playing at that super high level. So what was that experience like for you to be able to coach the girls that were that skilled and that in that position to be able to try out for a national team?
Yeah, well, a couple things. So at the time they were sophomores and freshmen in high school. So they were still pretty young. They were definitely the best of their age group.
Right.
But it was like a very fun experience just because you can kind of see how good somebody is that young, you know, and everybody was just so different. It was like, you know, how raw is this kid still, or how much does this kid understand the game, or this kid has like an incredible IQ, or, you know, this kid is just a super athlete, or this kid works super hard. There were so many things that, if I had an opportunity to like interview these kids and like put them in a room and do like some statistical breakdown, that there wasn't anything that they all necessarily had in common, which is kind of cool. That it's not just, oh, you know, these are the hardest working kids, or that these kids all can, they all play defense really well, or whatever it might've been. And I think that's, a really special thing, because then you can take that information back and say, any kid can go out here. Of course, they're talented, but if you come out here with just, say, this skill plus, you know, you're obviously, these kids are working hard and they really want to, they're competitive and all this stuff, that you have a possibility to make a team like this. And then there's also the brutal process of the kids who didn't make the team. And there are some kids who were more talented, but they didn't make the team because they weren't good teammates. And USA Basketball is looking for a specific character kid that's also skilled to represent, of course, USA Basketball. And so that was a really cool thing to see, that they weren't just choosing the best kids, and they weren't choosing just the kids that they invited, you know, that there was kids on the final roster that were pays, you know, that they were kids who paid their way to get there and worked super hard throughout the trials to get noticed because they weren't the invited kids. And their story of being able to make the team, through their certain process and trial was really cool.
What's the process for the selection and then letting kids know whether they've made it or not? What does that process look like? Were you involved in any of that in any way?
So there's a committee, of USA Basketball, and that's, whoever they decide at that time. And so it's like, you know, the president of the organization, some former Hall of Fame players, a couple of college coaches, a couple of whatever it might've been that comprised this, committee. And so they have the final say in everything. So even the head coaches who are ultimately going to coach these girls, they don't have necessarily a say. So we can give input, and we can, you know, if they ask about a kid, and usually the questions were about attitude or about responsiveness to coaching and all that stuff, because my role was that we're the ones who are actually coaching them the entire time. So through the drills, through the scrimmages, like we're with these kids for 8 hours a day, whereas the coaches who are actually going to end up coaching them were not, they weren't with them as much. So we're seeing these kids, you know, very often and in multiple different circumstances, and again, throughout drills and competition and scrimmages and all that stuff. So people would ask us in that regard, but, you know, it wasn't like, well, this kid should definitely make it and this kid should not.
We didn't have
necessarily that input. We were definitely allowed to express that, but the committee was going to be the ultimate selection. The actual process, I don't want to be wrong about it because it was a couple of years ago. But it's maybe roughly a 4-day thing. There's no cuts the first 2 days. So, there's roughly 30 or so invited athletes. And then there's, this particular year, there was roughly 200 total. And so all those other kids are paying their way to come out here to try to make the team. So zero cuts the first 2 days, just nonstop basketball, drills, scrimmages, workshops, all this different type of stuff. And then like there's one round of cuts, and then there's another round of cuts, and there's another round of cuts. And I think maybe I would say roughly 5 rounds through the whole thing. And then they get down to like 30 or so, and then there's the final cut. So maybe it was a little longer than 4 days, but something along those lines.
Gotcha. Yeah, I can imagine that process. I mean, as a high school coach, as any coach, whenever you have to cut a kid, that's tough. And I'm sure for those kids who are obviously among the best of the best in the country to hear that news that, you know, I didn't make it, you know, I can only imagine, especially for, again, a freshman or sophomore, eighth, ninth grade girl, that would be, I'm sure the emotion there, you know, being able to handle that in the right way as a coaching staff, as a committee, in whatever way they were able to, you know, express that. I'm sure that's a challenging situation to be able to have to tell a girl that, hey, you know, thanks for your effort, but you didn't make it. And so, it takes a special kind of person to be able to have the, I'm sure the empathy and the, you know, the right, you know, for lack of a better word, bedside manner to be able to, mm-hmm. to talk to a kid in that kind of situation. So, all right, I want to wrap up here by giving you a chance to share your contact information with people. So anybody who listened to the show can reach out to you if they just want to talk some basketball or they have a question for you. So go ahead and do that now. And if you have anything else that we didn't touch on that you'd like to share, you can go ahead and do that as well.
Yeah, for sure. So one thing for me personally, I'm a drill person. I love practice. So if anybody ever wants to reach out in that regard and get some drills that maybe they haven't seen, I try to come up with a lot of my own stuff and just try to like keep it fresh a lot. So would love to share drills. I love sets and quick hitters and all that stuff. So would definitely love to share that experience with the basketball community. I definitely don't mind if people, I prefer texts instead of phone calls because I'm still young. So so my cell phone is 714-717-0907. And email I'm super quick on. So the email is a little bit longer, but it's A and then my last name, Kreutner is my new married name. So that's Kreutner at sierracanyonschool.org. And you could also find that if you just went to the Sierra Canyon School website.
Put it all in the show notes so people have it too. So anybody who's listening can find it all. We'll put all that, all of Alicia's stuff in the show notes when we publish that out.
Yeah, so that's pretty much it. The only other thing, if anybody would be interested in, we talked about culture, and a few years ago I did an online broadcast for some company that I did like a Prezi presentation on just how to take your team to the top with like a culture change. So
oh, cool. That's
I do
awesome.
Have that presentation as well if anybody would be interested in looking at something like that. But I can talk basketball all day, any day. So I welcome it and would love it. And even feedback would be awesome.
Fantastic. Alicia, we can't thank you enough for taking an hour and 20 minutes or so of your time tonight to jump on the podcast with us. It's been a pleasure. And to everyone out there, we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Head Start Basketball's Player Development Academy offers Cleveland area players a unique opportunity to improve their basketball skills. Regardless of a player's age, skill level, or position, training with Head Start Basketball will elevate your game to the next level. Do you want to improve your ball handling, become a better shooter, or develop into a more skilled, confident player? Our academy classes offer training that's designed to do just that. Our training sessions are innovative and will have you learning skills that are transferable to actual games. We have four different class skill levels for boys and girls, ages 4 and up. All Player Development Academy classes will be held at the Strongsville Recreation Center. For more information or to get registered, please visit www.headstartbasketball.com.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast presented by Head Start Basketball.